UCL football fans, listen up. When you watch the UEFA Champions League with Heineken, you're never watching alone, even if you're watching alone. Heineken has teamed up with some of the world's greatest footballing legends to bring you the Heineken UCL Live. Seven legendary hosts to take you through every moment of seven unmissable UCL games, and they want you to get involved. Bring the banter and the rivalry, and you could win epic prizes. Tune in using the hashtag Heineken UCL Live on Twitter during match nights, and don't forget to enter the competition.
T's and C's apply. Not for persons under the age of 18. Drink responsibly.
Today is a great day for a car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on the SL podcast. Sizohlangana khona.
Good day and welcome to the car wash. This is episode number 72, proudly brought to you by Heineken. On today's show, we preview the Nedbank Cup final. We discuss the new Bafana Bafana coach and unpack Safa's internal issues. And we also discuss Opa Manyisa's struggle over the past three seasons. Whether you're listening to us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Mahikeng 96.7 FM's Game Time, welcome to the show. I, of course, am your host, Slu, but I'm not alone. I'm joined by former Ajax Cape Town and Mamelodi Sundowns goalkeeper, Mr. Sean Roberts. How are you doing today, sir?
My brother. All good, thank you.
And we are also joined by former Mamelodi Sundowns and Orlando Pirates midfielder, Teko Modise. How are you doing today, Teko?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, man.
Why did you laugh there, Teko?
Because I'm surprised where you get that from. That's weird.
Okay. It's good that we're starting the show off with some laughs because we don't know if Sean will be able to continue that trend with his joke of the day. What do you have for us this week?
Guys, all right. I tried to climb a really tall tower in France, but I fell off.
Okay. Oh my goodness. We're still waiting on a joke about beer, Sean. It's Heineken.
Damn it. You've got to remind me, man.
I'll end off with one. How's that?
No.
No. We give you one joke per week, Sean. That's what we can take.
Exactly. You taking the whole week to create a joke or to think of a joke. Imagine now you have to like do another joke in 45 minutes. No.
Oh, all right, but let's dive into the show. We start off today's show with pole position. Pole position is where we ask a question on our Facebook page to our readers about local football. This week, we asked, will Chiefs finish in the top eight come the end of the DStv Premiership campaign? Here's what you guys all had to say.
It's interesting time in the PSL where teams fighting for relegation, top eight, and the top finish. But for now, as for Chiefs, I don't think they will get it easy to get into top eight. They can fight it, but it's about players now. I don't think the coach can do anything. Now it's about the players showing their commitment to the team, that they can do it for a team.
Kaizer Chiefs still make it to top eight. Kaizer Chiefs is not playing well at all, but Kaizer Chiefs will make it on top eight.
Yeah, man, Kaizer Chiefs, it's going to be difficult for Kaizer Chiefs to be in the top eight. And it's only, you know, for them to work hard to be in the top eight.
And there you have it. A lot of, we did ask this question before the TTM results. So there was still a lot of hope in those voice notes saying that they just need to pull up their socks and, you know, all of this. But unfortunately, Chiefs then fell to TTM 2-1. TTM, of course, also fighting relegation. So that's a huge result for them. But Chiefs, they just keep on struggling. And I believe that was their game in hand on TS Galaxy. So they're in the same boat as everybody now. And basically every match is a three-pointer at this stage. But what was your reaction to the TTM result, gents?
Oh, man. It was it's one of those games. It could have gone either way. Both teams had significant chances. Bernard Parker smashing that corner of the post. That would have been a crack of a goal. I think Injabulo Blum, that got sent off, really affected Chiefs. He really, at such a young age, is really holding that midfield together. Thabo Nyamani, isn't he just a completely different player over the past two seasons? The difference he's making to TTM is amazing. And and the difference it makes for a new face, as in Dylan Kerr coming into TTM. And I've always said that sometimes you need just a fresh face, a new beginning for a team. And that's what's happened. And you can see he's got TTM playing. And I'm not a fan of TTM, don't get me wrong, but he's got them playing good football. And they've got a decent squad. Worrying times for Kaizer Chiefs. That's for sure. Worrying times. And it could have gone either way, the game, for sure. But just luck is not on their side at the moment. To give away a penalty with 2 seconds to play, and it was a penalty, is devastating. It's absolutely devastating.
Echo, what was your response? We saw you comment on it on Twitter. You didn't mention them by name, but we knew who you were talking about. What was your reaction?
Dude, there's a lot of things on Twitter I can't mention by name because I don't want to make news. Look, I think, honestly, I felt like, yes, Chiefs had opportunities, but TTM had an opportunity earlier on to bury the game, yeah, and lead 2-0 and control the tempo of the game. Yes, Blom's red card, I mean, we know how important he is to the team, and that affected a little bit of a rhythm. Now it forces guys now to work extra hard. But look, man, you know when they conceded that penalty, I it hurt. You know, it I felt bad for the whole squad. You know at times you're working so hard and you're trying to push on, and just things just keep happening. And that's one of those things, like the last kick feet of the dying minutes or something like that. And I think also with TTM is, I think it's a team that, of course, Dylan Kerr is smart enough. He knows the game, but it's TTM. It looks like they found their belief. They're starting now to understand what's the importance of them surviving, and pulling such results, you know, against Kaizer Chiefs. Kaizer Chiefs, listen, even though Kaizer Chiefs are not winning, they're very difficult to beat. And for TTM to come in and actually collect the maximum points, you know, it's like Shona said, it's worrying time for Kaizer Chiefs. But I'm still saying that I strongly believe they will pull, you know, some miracle some way. But slow.
Yeah.
Good bird.
It's very bird. But that's a bird.
It's very bird. It's very bird, my friend.
Yeah. And then elsewhere, Sundowns, and it was an important match for them against Maritzburg United. But of course, Sundowns on their day should always be dispatching of Maritzburg United. But a 2-0 win sends them 4 points clear at the top now. So it's going to be tougher on AmaZulu to chase them down. But we all knew Sundowns finished strong. So what was your reaction to this one? Another victory over Ernst Middendorp for Sundowns.
Oh, man. I've just got two words. Peter Shalalile. How good is this guy, man? He is just next level. I mean, there's just no one in contention for player of the season but him. And that's my opinion. But yeah, he's just been an absolute revelation. And Sundowns always in control, without a doubt. Like you said, Slew, you back them 99 out of 100 times to get 3 points against Maritzburg, or any team really at the moment. But football's a funny game. Anything can happen. But you've seen a championship-winning team there, and the display on how they've haven't had it their way the past 5 or 6 games, a couple of draws, a loss here and there. But, I mean, they've come back and they've just solidified their status as number one, and that is a championship winning team. And we can talk as much as about AmaZulu this, AmaZulu that, but that is the PSL champions without a doubt in my mind. What Benny has done is fantastic at AmaZulu, but we've seen how good Sundowns are.
Definitely. Deco, your response to your reaction to that match?
I was fortunate enough to do that game. I've done so many Maritzburg games. There's something interesting about Maritzburg. And
tell us,
Teko. Hey, look, you know, there's for me personally, I think there's very few coaches in the PSL that when you watch their team, they're so well structured with less quality, you know, compared to your top three, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. And with Maritzburg, when you watch them, like they you know, they drilled, you know, they they're very, very organized. And
it's the German way, Teko.
Yes, and they make it very difficult for opponents to actually penetrate them. And you can imagine if Modenop started with them in the beginning of the season.
Mm.
But anyway, so coming into the Sundowns game, I knew that Sundowns will basically go against the system that they saw over the weekend against Orlando Pirates, where you see two fullbacks when defending with a line of five at the back. So now that tells you that Mamelodi Sundowns will be able to control more of the ball possession.
Yeah.
And I saw that coming with Maritzburg because that's how Maritzburg plays. But what was interesting was the couple of changes that they made. With Gift Mutupa, I wasn't sure, to be honest with you, as to, yes, he played well against, when he came on against Orlando Pirates, but I wasn't sure as to if he starts, how are they going to complement each other with him and Shalulile. You know, and Shalulile played out of position a little bit, but once they had the ball, like there was that, it gave them more power, more threat going forward with Mutupa being a goal scorer himself and Shalulile as well. But I think Shalulile's game, friend, it has improved so much that there's no way that we can ignore him. Mm. But also what helps Sundowns is the players that were not playing regularly in the first half of the league, they're coming in now and they're helping the team to push forward.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's important, especially having the depth of the team. Because I've always said that you can have all the quality players within your team, and if they're not ready to play, there's no point. And now you can see that Modiba now is playing regularly. Yes, the K comes in as well and contribute. Now you've got Mutupa now. You know, there's so many players that still haven't been given a chance. And now with suspensions and red cards and injuries, you one would hope that other guys as well will step in and contribute positively to the team. But this is, like Shona said, this is a championship team. They know how to win. It's funny because before the game against Orlando Pirates, I had a chat with them because when they were walking about the pitch, they were so relaxed. Mm. And that vibe reminded me of how we were at Sundowns when I was still playing there. So I asked them, like, hey, you guys are going to let it slip. They're like, nah. And I was talking to the senior guys, like Onyango, Kenny Dimweni, Tempazwani, and all that stuff. They said, nah, don't worry. We're going to win today's game. That was against Orlando Pirates. I said, I don't worry. Stop stressing because you're going to lose your weight. And the way they played, and Sean, please. And the way they played and the confidence that they had, they reminded me of why they are who they are. And coming into Maritzburg's game and them continuing with the way they're continuing, it shows that, you know what, this is the team that, like we said last week, that it's for them to lose. Nobody will actually catch them. Yes, it's nice that AmaZulu are competing for, you know, and we're having a different conversation because it's been the same for the last, 20 years of the same top three competing against each other. So it's kind of nice now that we have a different conversation. But it's just that with Mamelodi Sundowns, the depth that they have, it actually helps them. And for now, I think they're on the roll where they know that they're going to win anyway, irrespective of who scores. They just know how to win. And I think that's the biggest threat.
Definitely. From there, we move on to a chat about a former Sundown star himself, actually, who's had some struggles over the past few years. So let's discuss Opa Manyisa. Prior to signing with Chippa at the end of March, he hadn't played a competitive match of football since the end of September 2019 before he suffered that Achilles injury. He then went on a tough, few years because he gets released by Sundowns. Actually, he parted ways in the last year of his contract. Then he joins TTM. He was expected to resurrect his career, but the deal went sour before he could even play a match. But he's finally now signed with Chippa. I believe he's made one appearance for them, or might be one in the league and one in the Nedbank Cup. But he obviously hasn't had consistent game time still in upwards of 2 years now, or approaching 2 years, sorry. So Sean, what effect do you think his lack of game time over the past 2 years has on him, especially being a more, you know, senior player at the age of 32? You've obviously dealt with injuries in your career. How difficult do you think that this situation with Opa Panisa is on his psyche as a player?
Yeah, I think it's more to do with the ego as well. I don't forget about that. I mean, Opa Panisa is a household name, and now he's a chipper. But I'm not giving a go at chipper. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, it's just, you know, that me and Teko have spoken about this at length. You know, when players sign for Sundowns, you sign for Sundowns, and you've got to be aware of that. And if you don't make the starting 11, you've got to fight for your place at Sundowns. And they won't give you your clearance at Sundowns. They will keep you there because that's, they've paid you, and they're going to keep you there. And yes, he's had some unlucky stints with injuries or whatever, but I think he played 2 games in 3 years at Sundowns, which is insane. And which means he's now played, you said, was it 2 games for Chipper? So it's 4 games in 4 years altogether now, which is unbelievable. I think he needs to count his blessings as well, that he's got a contract on the table and a chance for him to prove himself. But it cannot be easy from could you say a fall from grace in a you know, but he's got a chance now to prove himself wrong and to prove others wrong. So yeah, it's not a good place to be in terms of a mental battle that's probably going on in his head. And he's had some off the field problems. We know that. And yeah, he's a cool guy, man. He's a cool guy and he's a hell of a footballer. I wish him all the best. I really do. But it cannot be easy. I think Teko probably knows him a lot better than I do. But to go through this ain't easy. I'm glad he's got a club and I'm glad he's got a chance to resurrect his career.
Teko, what are your thoughts on Ace and his struggles over the past few years? How do you think he's coping with it, especially now that he's, you know, with a lower team but still has the chance?
Look, so when I was in PE doing cheaper game versus Baraka, he was one of the subs, and you know, I wanted to get more out of him, but before I could get more, somebody came in and greeted us, so it interrupted the whole conversation. But he didn't seem like a guy that was confident enough anymore. He didn't seem like a guy that have this belief about his talent anymore. I think what happened, especially at TTM, I think, you know, it affected his mentality. It affected his career big time. Yes, what happened to Sundowns is he couldn't get enough game time, and then you move somewhere else. You're thinking, okay, this is my chance to prove myself, and something happens. And I don't think he's a cheaper because he wanted to. I think he's a cheaper because of the circumstances that allowed him to.
Of course.
And then now he's there, and you find these coaches that, you know, from the Diski, and the fact is, the chances are the coach was once a fan. And now when they're looking at Opa, they're still looking at Opa Manisa from Orlando Pirates. They're not looking at Opa Manisa now. So now sometimes that affects the selection, because now you still want to see that old Opa, not understanding that, you know, this guy hasn't played in so many years and he had one of the most career-threatening injuries that he had to come back from. And for him to just, you know, the system just to swallow him just like this, I mean, it's painful. And we've seen this with so many players where, you know, you become a household name for so long, and when things start going bad, and then they just really, really go bad. And it's just unfortunate that he's in a situation still with a team that is fighting for relegation, but still is not given a chance to play.
Yeah.
You know, it must be very painful for him, because as much as I understand what Sean is saying about proving himself, it's just that what is there for Opa to prove? You know, when you play for such a team like Chipper United, the problem is, I really, really struggle to believe that the coach is the one that influences who plays.
Sure.
I think it all goes down to the chairman as to who he wants to play and who he wants to see on the pitch. I think one of those Opa signings, I think it was Dan Madlisela who influenced that signing, but Dan left And then after that, OPA been struggling to get a chance. And you look at Chippa, how they play. For me is I'll always look at to guys that will actually fight for the team and whenever the experience is needed, and OPA should be there to actually help the guys. Yes, Kit Lynch's is doing that role as well, but you need more for you to survive. Mm. You need your Anthony LaForce to survive as well.
I think what I meant when I said to prove to himself in terms of, because I had a career-threatening injury and it wasn't about anyone else but myself.
Because
I told myself a story. Imagine the story I can tell coming back from this injury.
Yeah.
And I did, and that's when I got my Bafana call up, you know, straight after the injury. So I think it's, in terms of that, I meant that he can get through this tough part. And if he can get through this tough part, he's still got 4 or 5 years left in him, I think.
Yeah, and Sean, also what helps, I think with open situation, what could help is sitting down with his agent, move to a team that's fighting for honors.
Yeah.
Because then if you play in a team that fights for honors, it's easy to get a chance to play and showcase your talent, because the pressure is winning the title or something, or being in a top eight than fighting relegation. Because when fighting relegation, there's too many emotions that are involved. And we know how Chippa, how reactive Chippa is. And look, that move to Chippa, for me, it was a surprise. I was shocked. But I also understand that the guy wants to play football.
Do we know how long he signed there? Do you know how long he signed there, Teko?
I think he signed Slu, tell us then.
He signed on a short term until the end of this season with an option to extend. So I think it all depends on whether Chippa survive or not. But yeah, either way, I think he'll probably be looking for a new team after this season, though.
So, which is great. Yeah, so I agree with Teko. I think his representatives, if he has any, needs to pull a finger out their ass and get him to a club that is competing, definitely a top four, top five club. I agree with Teko.
Yeah, and also, Sean, is as much as we want to end, you know, the biggest amount of money in the league or whatever the case may be, sometimes, you know, you have to step back just a little bit, you know, just go back a bit, and you can go to your Super Sport, you can go to your Golden Knights, you can go to all those teams and sacrifice a little bit of your salary and be able to play again.
Yes,
because if you play again, it gives you more years.
Yes.
And now once you disappear like this for 4 years, it becomes a problem. If he doesn't play next season, it's done.
Yeah.
He's finished. Yeah.
I agree.
You know?
Yeah, interesting names that you threw out there into the ring. I mean, a lot of these top eight sides, I think, would probably have space for a guy like OPA on his day. You know, there's also Swallows there. There's Cape Town City there. So it'll be an interesting thing to see. But we wish OPA all the best, of course. And from there, we move on to the international news desk with Sokola Duma's international correspondent, Mr. Kurt Buckerfield. Just before that, let's pay some bills and hear from our sponsors at the show. UCL football fans, listen up. When you watch the UEFA Champions League with Heineken, you're never watching alone, even if you're watching alone. Heineken has teamed up with some of the world's greatest footballing legends to bring you Heineken UCL Live. 7 legendary hosts to take you through every moment of 7 unmissable UCL games. And they want you to get involved. Bring the banter and the rivalry, and you could win epic prizes. Tune in using the hashtag HeinekenUCLLive on Twitter during match night. And don't forget to enter the competition. T's and C's apply. Not for persons under the age of 18. Drink responsibly.
Can you repeat that, please, the last part?
But drink responsibly.
There we go.
Thanks. But let's welcome Kurt Buckerfield to the show. How you doing, Kurt?
What's up, Slu? Good, man. How are you guys?
Hey,
good. Yes, my favorite part of the show.
Well, gents, the inevitable has happened. We have an all English Champions League.
Come on, City.
I cursed it.
Which means who knows what will happen in the UEFA Europa League, but we don't talk about those things. We're here to talk about the Champions League. So let's start with the Manchester City game. They dispatched of PSG like it was nothing. 2-0 victory for them on the day. Actually, both English sides won 2-0 this week, but City go through 4-1 on aggregate. What was your reaction to that match? I mean, we kind of predicted that they'd have the mental advantage as well after that comeback victory in the first leg. But what did you see? What struck you the most about that match on Tuesday?
I wasn't really struck by PSG's behavior in that game, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But that's what really stood out to me, was just the petulance and the childishness, the screaming in the referee's face every 5 minutes. Di Maria sending off Verratti and Paredes and Herrera. I've always kind of viewed PSG as bottlers, and not that they went into this game as favorites, but there's just this lack of maturity in that side. And especially when the going gets tough, it seems to be the culture at the club. Very, very good individuals, but that doesn't translate to success, at least not outside of France. We all remember that Barcelona game a few years ago where they had, a 4-goal lead.
Yeah.
And ended up being beaten 6-1 in that second leg. So that's what really stood out to me. But other than that, great game. City are just fantastic to watch when they're in full swing. I think Pep, a bit of a masterstroke having Fernandinho in that side for that game in particular, because it was the second leg. Things were always going to get a little heated. And Fernandinho is so good at playing that kind of game, at getting under your skin. He does it really quietly. He manages to escape without a booking. And he just knows how to rile players up. And it's very silent, but it worked a treat. I mean, Fernandinho didn't start the first game. That's why I mentioned it. It was Rodri in midfield. So it was very, very pointed and obvious as to what Pep was trying to do. And it worked. I mean, great to see. But we all predicted it. Not surprising at all to see City go through to the final.
Did you hear about, apparently, I think it was Verratti and somebody else came out saying, oh, the ref told us to f*** off. If we had said that, it would have been a 3-match suspension and all of this shit. Do you believe that at all? Do you think that maybe they got riled up? And if he did tell them f*** off, do you think that there should be some punishment for the ref? It's so funny to me.
No, listen. Listen, I'm all for, I don't encourage referees or players to be verbally abusive, but is there a more appropriate response to three little guys in your face every 5 minutes after a tackle? Just jog on. Like, I mean, those players, the way they talk to referees, we see it every single weekend, the way they talk to referees, the way they shout to referees and scream and swear. We all know that they use that kind of language. Come on, man, grow up. I think that's just PSG players and Pochettino trying to direct their anger towards somebody else, when they really just have to look within, because that's a pathetic excuse. I think it's very silly of them to even bring that up, to bring it to the attention of the public. Who cares? The referees don't go disclosing absolutely everything that's said to them throughout 90 minutes every week.
Of course.
So the players shouldn't do that. I think it's really childish. And again, it just speaks to PSG's, petulance and stupid
petulance.
I mean, can you imagine these guys earning 200 grand a week and then complaining they got told
the the referee told me
from a City fan, Sean, how are you feeling? I mean, you must be top of the world right now. This is your first UEFA Champions League final that you guys are going into.
That's hard to believe, eh? That it's the first one. But I mean, I think Kurt's breakdown of the game was absolutely perfect. You can't better that. I mean, Mahrez, Ederson's ball was just unbelievable. I mean, Alex Ferguson's always said a world-class keeper is going to get you 13 points a season. And that's a great example of how that works. City were phenomenal. I'm over the moon. Yes, it could have been against Real the final, but beggars can't be choosers. If we lose to Chelsea, dude, I'm just gonna, I don't know.
It's gonna be the battle of the billionaire takeover clubs. Chelsea are Man City before Man City, if you think about it. But speaking of Chelsea, 2-0 victory over Real Madrid. Pretty sturdy performance, I'd say. It was an entertaining match, though. But it's good to see Werner on the score sheet. Mason Mount has been excellent for them in the Champions League this season. What did you make of that 2-0 victory and the 3-1 aggregate win over the two legs?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I also wasn't really surprised. I think that Tuchel, we've spoken about the difference he's made since he's come in. So I wasn't really surprised with the outcome of the tie. I was surprised at how easy they made it look at time, especially in that second leg. Look, I didn't want an all-English final. And I'm going to just touch on what Sean just said. If Pep gets to a final with City after this long and loses to Chelsea... Guys, I'm done. Dude.
Oh man,
it almost feels like that's written in the stars, but that's just coming from a hater. What did you guys think of the match, gents? I mean, Timo Werner, what an absolute world class finish! Oh my goodness, you know, took an absolute what's the competition for best goals of this of the year? I'm forgetting it now. The Puskas, absolute Puskas banger from Timo. if you can't tell my sarcasm, it was like from 3 yards out, right?
Yeah.
But what did you guys make of the match and now the all English final?
Yeah, again, City Chelsea final, amazing for City. A bit bummed about Chelsea, but it is what it is. But Chelsea could have scored quite a few, hey? Courtois made a couple of telling saves. Especially one-on-ones. He's not my favorite keeper, but he is world class. I'm not a Chelsea fan. Bleh, whatever.
Decker, what did you make of it? Do you think that Chelsea in guys like Mason Mount and Timo Werner when he decides to perform, do you think that they have enough to go against that City squad and that midfield in the final?
Look, to be honest with you, I'm not a Chelsea fan and I'm not a Chelsea fan. But I watched the games against Real first leg and last night's game. Look, I think with how Real are playing, they made things a little bit easier for Chelsea. With those three midfield that they have, and in Real Madrid, the playing flat makes things a little bit difficult when it comes to defend. And I think that they're old anyway. I think they're still playing the same way that they were playing 8 years ago. And I think that's a problem. And with how Chelsea was structured, especially yesterday, it was very interesting to see. But yet again, you have all these younger guys that have so much speed and skill going forward. But then in the Champions League final, you're going to play a team that, you know, robs you possession. So your speed, you need to use it while having the ball, but they're not going to give you the ball. So you end up not, you know, able to use that speed. It's going to be very interesting to see the technical side of the game. But I think Chelsea deserves to be where they are. You know, they've got a good coach. And I think they showed yesterday that they really, really deserve to be in the final. But look, man, they're playing. I think they're going into the finals underdogs because of what Pep has done for so many years. I think it'll be interesting to see how Pep lines up. Because if you look at the game against PSG, as much as Kurt spoke about Fernandinho, I also realized that Gundogan as well wasn't playing higher up than he has been playing high up, especially the whole season. He was playing like just next to Fernandinho. And that helped because Fernandinho will be covering, but in the build-up, you know, Gundogan will be there for the build-up and to bypass that pressing trap that, you know, PSG had. And we know that as much as Fernandinho is good, but he's not a good, you know, baller that will be able to, you know, help us come out of the situation that are tight. But Gundogan could. So it'll be very interesting to see as to, because Kante had a fantastic game yesterday.
It's phenomenal.
You know? Yeah, so it'll be very interesting to see because Kante will be pressing the same way that PSG will be pressing. Yeah. And I think in the midfield, he's the only guy that presses the Chelsea. You can't be, Kevin De Bruyne can't be marked by Jorginho. Really. You know? But it's going to be very interesting. But I didn't want the English final because the thing is, I've been saying this, like the team that wins the Champions League, now, irrespective of how they play, the next season, the world turns into that team and everybody start playing more or less the same similar style as the team that won the Champions League. You look at how when Liverpool won it, everybody now started pressing. after Liverpool won the Champions League. So now I want the good footballing team to win Champions League so that next season you can go back to the era where Spain was dominating. You can go back to proper football, you know, like a good passer can be appreciated. And as much as I'm a big Pep Guardiola fan, I just wish that he could win this convincingly. Not that 1-0, you know, scrappy goal. Just wish that he could actually dominate this game, because I don't think Chelsea have the players to actually compete with Manchester City, especially in such a big game.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. City on the verge of a treble, so it should be an interesting final for sure. And in other European news, Jose Mourinho has already landed his next coaching gig. He will join AS Roma next season. Before you ask, he will not be facing Manchester United in the UEFA Europa League. That's a 6-2 deficit he won't have to overcome, luckily for him. But
so lucky.
He's already landed his next one. He joins AS Roma. Look, I'm not going to sit here act like I watch Roma enough to know whether he suits their style or anything like that. But he's already reportedly targeting Manchester United players and stuff like that. So, Kurt, what's your reaction to him already having another coaching gig? It means that we'll miss out on him being a football pundit, which I actually enjoyed quite a bit. But what was your reaction?
So he will be a pundit at least until, you know, after the Euros. I think he signed a contract with TalkSport or whoever it was. Nice. I was surprised at how soon he got a new job, just because I can't believe teams still want Jose Mourinho. I'm obviously not surprised because it's not going to be a bigger team. You know, this kind of just shows where his level is right now. And that he was so willing to take the job. I'm not trying to throw shots, but, you know, he was so willing to take the job. Apparently the discussions, you know, were over pretty quickly. It was all done in secret. I don't think anybody saw it coming. I don't think Roma were mentioned among the teams after him. They announced that Paulo Fonseca, the current manager, would be stepping down at the end of the season. And then three hours later, they announced that Mourinho was going to be the guy to replace him. So look, I'm not surprised. That's Mourinho's level right now. I don't think he could have got a bigger job in Europe. And I don't think that the expectations at Roma are as great as they would be at a bigger club, as at a Juventus or even at Spurs, for goodness sake. So let's see what happens. I don't expect much, to be honest with you. I don't think that Mourinho is going to be at Roma for the next 5 years, 6 years. I think it's going to be another 1 to 2 year thing. Yeah, people expect him to change. People are hoping he changes, saying, well, I actually think he could do well at Roma. And I just want to ask them, what gives you that indication? Where are you? You know, he's been fired from his last four jobs. His last two have gone really, really badly. Yeah. You just know that he's going to walk into the dressing room and pick somebody to bully right away. And it's just going to end the same. I really hope, and I would love for Mourinho to change, and not to just change his football approach, but the way he man manages and handles players, especially in press conferences, and the way he talks about them in public. We all know that behind the scenes it's different, and I know that he's a lot sweeter and kinder behind the scenes. But he has to manage. I mean, he has to change, and he has to adapt to dealing with a modern footballer. We've spoken about it before, I think a while ago, how, you know, if you come out in public and pick on a guy like Luke Shaw logs onto Twitter and just sees his name being thrown around on the Twitter streets and on all over social media, and it makes him feel 10 times worse than the comment did. And that's just how it is these days. And Mourinho hasn't really adapted to that. And what made him so successful years ago was that he dealt with older players, all guys in their 30s, hard men from a different generation, who could handle that kind of thing. But there was this switch, you know, in Mourinho's final season at Chelsea in 2015, where things got really ugly. He just soured up. And I don't think he's been the same since. It'll be very interesting to see what happens, but I don't expect fireworks. I really don't.
Before we close off the international news desk, I'm taking bets, Sean, Teko. How many years does Mourinho last at Roma?
18 months.
18 months, Deco?
8 months.
Damn! You know, this is a guy who's earned 80 million pounds. It's 1.6 billion rand in his contracts being settled.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's unbelievable.
Damn. Well, there you have it, the international news desk. We'll obviously pay attention to the Champions League final, and we'll have our ear to the street, so to speak, with Mourinho at AS Roma. I don't know if we'll be talking about Roma every week unless Mourinho has more controversial comments loaded in his arsenal. But thank you very much, Mr. Kurt.
You're always going to bring up Arsenal.
Hey, always.
Cheers, here's another job that Mourinho might have been up for. I'm just joking, but the Bafana coach has been announced. We have Hugo Bruce, who's already become the subject of jokes online. People are like, now we have fragrances as Bafana coaches because of, obviously, it sounds like Hugo Boss. But you know, he's a Belgian coached around the continent. He actually won AFCON with Cameroon back in 2017. But I mean, we've been talking about 5-year, 10-year plans with Bafana and rebuilding. And we have to be honest about the fact that Hugo Bruce is 69 years old, which, you know, is retirement age for most people. But in this country, you can get elected president at 69. So it's like, but Sean, what is your reaction? I mean, it's not like we know the most about this guy, but he has a pretty good resume. Do you think that it's a solid hire?
Well, first of all, 69 is my favorite number. But anyway, it's a fairly I didn't see this coming. I'm obviously not a soccer wizard. I've never heard of him before. I don't know if you had, or I don't know if Teko had. But, you know, it's nice to see he's played. He's got 30, 40 caps for his country when he did play. He's coached Cameroon. He's won the African Nations Cup. He's no stranger to African football. I think he even coached... did I say his name right?
Yeah, Ngonga.
So he's got a little bit of African presence. But, yeah, I didn't see it coming. You know, he's won Super Cups. He's won Cups. He's won Coaches of the Year awards in Belgium. So, yeah, I think the CV's there for sure. But he's walking blind into a job, really. I mean, I don't think he knows much about South African football and South African players. Did I read that and say he's been hired as his assistant? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So, clever move from SAFA, I think. Keeps everyone happy. And well-deserved for Nseki, I believe. So, yeah, I think if you've got a local coach with local knowledge who's been in the hot seat before, who's obviously not trying to backstab you to get the job because he's already been fired from it, I think he's got that on his side. I don't know. My answer is I'm not sure. I'm not sure where this is going to go. I hope we're just not going to see history repeat itself, where at the end of the day, he's not going to have a say who gets chosen, who gets picked. But yeah, he's got a big job on his hands, and good luck.
Yeah, let me ask a follow-up, because you did mention history. You know, the fact that it's the same guys at SAFA. Do you think that history is bound to repeat itself? You know, obviously he's clearly not picking his own technical staff, because if we're as good as it is for Nseki being assistant coach, it means that Hugo's not coming in with his, you know, whole technical team that he's worked with before. Yeah. So do you think
And Slew, and rightly so in this instance, I don't think he could bring his technical team here, because they wouldn't have a clue about the local game. So I think what SAFA has done here, I wouldn't say it's genius, but it's very good. I think if there is an assistant for him to have, it's probably Nseki. It was a surprise appointment, but well done. It's not often you say well done in SAFA in the same sentence, but I'm saying it. But having said that, Slew, a leopard never changes its spots. That's my answer. So let's wait and see.
And a question that I'll pass on to Deco is, we obviously heard a rumor. In fact, News 24 and certain sites confirmed Benny as coach. They were like, it's a done deal. And then SAFA had to come out and, you know, put those fires out and say no. And then I heard that apparently the amount that they offered Benny wasn't enough. So they increased the offer, but offered Hugo Bruce that instead of Benny. So, but in some ways, I'm happier that Benny didn't take the job. But what's your reaction in terms of just how the week has progressed? Benny's coach, no, he's not the coach, and now Hugo Bruce. What's your reaction to how everything has gone down this week?
Chief, I'm happy that Benny didn't take the job, or the job didn't go to Benny. You know, for so many reasons. Look, first of all, the Hugo Boss guy, he comes in from wherever he comes from, and having Nseki as an assistant coach, right? And the first thing that he's gonna do is probably have a meeting with Nseki and be introduced to the guys that Nseki used. So therefore, I think it's gonna be just a little bit of they're gonna just mix a little bit of maybe new players, but continuing with what they had, because really Nseki used the same team. I think that's all he had. He couldn't look beyond what he had, and now the new coach is gonna come. Nseki can't be recommending new players because he couldn't as a coach. So I still believe that things are still going to be the same. It's just with a different face. Mm-hmm. And for the fact that we have so much faith in people that know nothing about our game, our culture, our football, we have so much faith to bring them in and all the type of stuff. And we don't have any faith in our local guys. It's, for me, it's still a problem. Look, in African teams, you look at all African teams, you look at if they do actually hire, probably maybe let's say Senegal hire a coach, they'll be looking at a coach that will be able to speak the language and understand the players themselves and be taught the culture itself. And in that space as well, there are guys that play for the national team, your Diouf, all the guys that meant so much to the national team, they emphasize the importance of the flag to the new coach that doesn't know anything. Now we have Hugo Boss coming in. Nseki can't emphasize the importance of the badge because he's never worn the badge. He never played for the national team. Yeah. So for me, we're still stuck in the same position. We just have a different face to it. We just put a makeup on it. There's nothing that will change for me. Yes, I heard that the coach said, you know, with the Olympics, the under 23 is going to the Olympics, that we need to look at that squad and be able to come in and change and all that type of stuff. That's what they say. Every coach that has been hired at Bafana, that's all they say. That's the first thing that they say. Now we need to change. But they come back, they're going to be selecting the same players that have been selecting all along. So for me, is for the fact that Bafana or whatever technical team that they have, they're not considering our guys, right? There's a problem. Two, for the fact that we're willing to give more money to guys that comes in here for holidays. That's basically for holidays. And we're not even guaranteed that they're gonna, you know, bring good results for us just because he did that with Cameroon. Look at what Cameroon had. We saying that he won AFCON with Cameroon. Yeah, look at the players that played there. The 80% of them played overseas. It's easy to track them. It's so much easier. So now when you come to a local game, there's Baraka playing against Chipa. Would you fly down to PE and go watch that game? You won't. So now, but now when you have a local coach that coached in the local PSL, like for instance, for Eric Tinkler, for instance, he knows the players. Now we're getting Hugo Boss to come in. Still with Nseki, that was a South African guy that was coaching Bafana. We had no identity of how we want to play. Here comes the Belgian guy that was a coach of the year. Yeah, but it's in Belgium, guys. And then he comes into the country. Now we believe that he's going to do better than what Nseki did. There's no way.
Yeah. And you brought up a really good point about the language thing, because French is an official language of Cameroon. Obviously, being from Belgium, Hugo Bruce can speak French, so there would be no issue there. And maybe they have Molefe Nteki there just as a buffer for like being able to communicate with players properly.
In French.
In French. Look, man, I've been reading a lot of publications on this matter. They saying Carlos Queiroz couldn't come because he was not allowed to bring his own technical team. Mm. And Benny as well, it's the same. You know, he wanted to bring his own technical team. Look, I'm still saying that I'm glad that Benny didn't go, because I think Benny still has a lot to offer in the PSL itself.
Yeah.
Imagine Benny wanted to bring Yusabagan Mvete and Slimcut into the Bafana setup. Slimcut played for national team. Benny played for the national team. It would be the first time to have people that actually played in a national team to be there.
Yeah.
All these years, guys, the only person that was that had an opportunity to coach that played for the national team, I think it was Steve Compella, and just for a short stint, and Peter Msimang. But we never really had a player that we still have pictures of that played in the national team, that understand what it means for a national team. That still shows you that in the offices of SAFA, still people don't want to lose their positions. They still want to be there. They're clueless about what football is today. For the fact that, with no disrespect to all the legends that are there in the technical, whatever, the technical advisors or whatever the case might be, but the fact that they still want a foreigner to come in and dictate us as to how we need to play, it's a problem for me.
Yeah.
Look, dude, like, I don't care who they bring in, even Pep Guardiola, I don't care who they bring in, for the fact that they don't have the respect, you know, of our own local South African coaches to take the job, because those guys know exactly what's... Because for the fact, look, Hugo Bosz can come here. He won't be able to go to France to watch any of our players. He won't go to even Belgium, where he comes from, to watch any of our players, because we've got so many youngsters that are playing overseas. SAFA won't be giving them money to go and actually watch those boys to come in and play. The only thing that you'll be relying on is stats. You know, we won't be seeing whether they'll be able to fit into the national team. So therefore, we're saying to ourselves that, okay, so this guy comes in, he's going to actually dictate on how we need to play. Tactic-wise and the style-wise, and now do we have the players? Because he said that the average age of the national team is 32, 31. Look, I support you fully there. I'm 100% with the coach there. He wants to change a little bit. But then what is the age of a youngster to him, and what is the age of the youngster in South Africa? Those are two different topics. In South Africa, when you're 25, you're a youngster. That side, when you're 19, you're a youngster. We don't have 19-year-olds that are playing in the PSL that are good.
No. Yeah, that's true. A lot of our youngsters are overseas.
Yeah. And so when you're saying change, what is change? What are you talking about? Because the last four coaches, they've been going with the same system. We're looking at all the big three teams. The majority of our national team have been dominated by the big three teams. So for me, I was still having problems with Nseki's selection, because he's only watching a couple of teams. He's not watching other guys. So, look, I've got so many issues with SAFA and Bafana.
Tell us how you really feel, Turko.
Like, I'm mad about this. I don't have a problem with Hugo Bosz being a coach, because, you know, the vacancy is there. You put in your application. I don't have a problem with that. But it's just that I have a problem with us not having that transparency with SAFA. SAFA is not transparent enough. You know, they didn't approach Carlos Queiroz. Why we still want Carlos Queiroz to come back and coach? Why are we recycling these coaches? Why don't we have a fresh idea, fresh coach, a younger coach? When you speak about 5-10 year plan, why don't you have a coach that will actually be there when the time comes?
Yeah.
And it's and when it comes to SAFA and the influence of former players, guys who've won the badge, we have more people leaving. I mean, Neil Toby left his role as technical director at SAFA last year. So a lot of those minds are not there in terms of you know, players who've actually donned the jersey before. But it should be interesting. And I mean, this is a developing thing. We're always going to talk about Bafana and SAFA, because we have the FIFA World Cup qualifiers coming up as well, which should be fun. But from there, we move on to this week in football history.
Today, we remember great moments from the past. We dive into the time capsule. Join us as we remember great moments from this week in football history.
This week, back in 2002, Juventus completed a remarkable run to the Serie A title, thanks mostly due to a season-end collapse by Inter Milan. This week, back in 2011, Real Madrid winger Cristiano Ronaldo scored one of the fastest hat-tricks in club history as they beat Sevilla. So he did it in just over 10 minutes, which was just 2 minutes shy of the club record set by Pepillo back in 1960, towards the end of April. But Ronaldo still eventually did match Pepillo's record with an eight-minute hat-trick in 2015. So whether he was chasing the record or not, he ended up getting there. And then this week, we wish a happy birthday to Bafana and Swallows left-back Sfiso Santi. We wish a happy birthday to Banyana forward Tembi Hatana, who's actually doing great up in Europe with Milan. We also wish a happy birthday to Cape Town City midfielder Thabo Nodada. We wish a happy birthday to Cape Town City midfielder Mpomakola as well, and TS Galaxy captain Given Msimango. And Tepo Masilela. And
what's he, 50? It's his 50th, eh?
Come on, Sean.
No, that's your age, Sean. We all know. All right. But a big happy birthday to everyone that I mentioned there. And real quick, let's dive into this Nedbank Cup final preview. It's a funny one to me, particularly just thinking of the two teams. So TTM versus Chipper United. You know, if I'd said that that's an important match at the end of the season, you would have thought it was a bottom of the table PSL clash, but this is a Nedbank Cup final, 7 million rand on the table, plus a spot in the CAF Confederations Cup.
Come on.
Yo, who's your money on? And who do you back, like, in terms of both? Because, I mean, we want the Nedbank Cup winner to survive relegation, but we don't know at this point. So who's your money on this weekend? What should we be watching out for? And how crucial is this, the winnings in particular, the 7 million rand to these teams?
Yeah, it's a massive game. It's a huge game. I'm going to put my money on TTM. I think both teams are in a similar position where they've just got new coaches in. And we all know, I think we spoke about it earlier, we all know what a difference a new coach can bring, even though Heric has been a Chipper, I think, 385 times. And I don't know, bizarre. Anyway, both teams have beaten Chiefs in the last couple of weeks, bizarrely. You know what I'm saying? But I think what we saw the other night with TTM and Chiefs, there was a bit of a spark in TTM, and I quite enjoyed watching that game. There's a very definite plan to the game, which I don't think Chipper have, and I think there's a lot more quality, believe it or not, in TTM's squad than there is in Chipper, and I think there's a bit more big match temperament in TTM. A good example, Thabo Nyamani with the last kick of the game to give TTM a well-needed 3 points penalty. That's big match temperament. And I think that's what's needed in a game like this. And I think that's what's going to give TTM the edge.
Deco, your preview. Who's your money on?
Look, I think on paper, TTM should be winning this. Easy. You can't go all the way and be able to, you know, pull off a game like you did against Sundowns and go play Chipper in the final and be different. I think they on paper they are, but the problem is these are two teams that are fighting for their lives. Here's 7 million rand, a lot of money, but 35 million of the status is more. And we, like you said, Stu, we want both teams to survive, to whoever wins to survive and come back and be able to defend it. And you're looking at the type of players that both teams have. Chipper on the day, they might surprise so many people. TTM also, they do have an idea, they do have the players. It's up to them because of also what they went through the whole season. I think they deserve to win, especially for the players, you know, they went through such a difficult time not getting paid. but it just did. Imagine Chipa wins. You know what it says? It says what Chipa has been doing is justifiable.
Don't say that.
That's what I'm saying. So I just hope football to make sense. Chipa shouldn't win. TTM should win.
That's a big statement.
Yeah. No, the thing is, I'm not saying, look, Chipa should survive. To survive the PSL or something, that's on him. But it just is football karma or football gods should be listening to me right now. TTM players went through a lot this season. Changing of ownership, not getting paid, your open money is a saga. There's always been problems with that team. They finally got it right. They're in the finals. They deserve to reward themselves, the players, you know, and this is a team also that knows how to win and all the type of stuff. Yes, Chipa also deserves, but looking at how they got into the final. So for me, my money's on TTM purely for football reasons.
Nkosi.
Thank you.
Should be a very interesting final. Next week, by the way, we want to dive into chatting about Celtic's continued financial struggles, which have resurfaced this past April. It's something that we have to unpack because, you know, financial issues at clubs can lead to very, very, very particular massive changes, which we've seen with the likes of Wits and TTM, which we've seen with the likes of Highlands Park and TS Galaxy. So we don't want the same things to happen to Bloom Celtic, but it's an issue that's continued for a very long time now. So we're going to unpack that next week. We'll also, of course, have reactions to the Nedbank Cup final and all of your usual local football news. But the show isn't over, folks, because as we journey onwards, you know, we get into our metaphorical car of the week with Sean Roberts.
Listeners or viewerships might have seen it. Gaston Serino's 2019 Tiguan that he has pimped up. Despite VW deliberately engineering the Tiguan to better meet the needs of buyers, it still has enough Teutonic DNA and blends tradition with competitiveness. Still, in comparison to the original, it's fairly obvious VW has sacrificed some pace for greater space. The Tiguan is a popular car in local football and a favorite family vehicle among South Africans looking for a ride that can seat their family comfortably. There's a lot to like about the Tiguan. It's cleanly designed, very comfortable, and generously sized as a 5-seater, not so much as a 7-seater. Other than it needs to up its game under the hood, the biggest hurdle to its long-term success is simply the size and depth of the competition out there. As far as the prices are concerned, the Tiguan is priced between 500 and 750,000 rand. I give it an 8.5 out of 10. There's lots of players that have this car, by the way. It's a beauty.
And we love a VW in Mzansi. But, you know, some of us don't have the money yet and we need to get some motivation, you know, to up our bank balance. You know what I'm saying? So what do you have for us this week, Mr. Robert?
Short and sweet one from Mr. Khotso Maleko. No matter how difficult. Khotso Maleko says. There we go.
You have some Heineken, Chief.
Jeez, man. Okay. Khotso Maleko says, no matter how difficult it is, just laugh.
Hey, perfect.
That's it, man.
Especially if you're trying to pronounce the word difficult. Just laugh it off. Well, that has been episode number 72 of The Car Wash, proudly brought to you by Heineken. Thank you very much, whether you've been listening to us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Mahikeng 96.7 FM's Game Time. Thank you very much for tuning in. I have been your host, Slu. That has been Mr. Sean Roberts.
Nkosi.
And that has been Mr. Teko Mudise.
Eita daso.
And we will see you all same time, same place next week. Peace.
Today is a great day for a car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is The Car Wash on the SL Podcast. Sizohlangana khona.